And then one more point which I want to add about La Khata illa Ali la Saif illa Zulfikar, that Fakir, Dr. Hunzai tells me that in a Farman to Badakhshan, which used to be in Farsi in Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah Talbatullah Alayhi's time, there is a statement that Maulana Sultan Shah told the Badakhshan Jamaat that my great-great-great-grandfather, Maulana Ali, used to fight with a sword of iron because that was his time, that the Prophet had to fight one after another defensive battles against his enemies. So he had to fight with a sword of iron. And then Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah says in this Farman, today I fight with the sword of knowledge. I think that's a very beautiful thing to remember. I looked up the word Zulfikar in the Kalam Imam Mubin, and I found an amazing story there about it, that Maulana Sultan Shah used to tell the Jamaat long stories, you know. But this Farman was not there. This Farman is with the Badakhshan Jama. And of course, I don't read Farsi because you know that a Japanese professor went to Badakhshan, went to Tajikistan some years ago, and she photographed all the Farsi Farmans which the Khalifas there have. And she has published them. They are called the Kawasaki Papers. If any of you are interested, why don't you go on the internet? But like me, unless you know Farsi, you will not be able to read them, right? But apparently, they are amazing. Kawasaki Papers. Maulana Sultan Shah's Persian Farmans to the Jamaat of Tajikistan, a Japanese lady. That's why they are called the Kawasaki Papers. It's a published book now. That's for your general knowledge, okay? So that point and another point which I thought I would share with you because I think it always helps you to remember things maybe, yes? You know that when I was at the Ismaili Center with the Tariqa Board, I used to show many, many people around the Ismaili Center. And one day, a lady, American woman, curator of the Islamic section, I think Minneapolis or some other place like that, right? Cincinnati maybe, I don't remember now. She came to the Ismaili Center and I showed her around. And when we went up the stairs, she was also a curator of art, so she had a very sharp eye. And she looked at the banister of the Ismaili Center staircase. And, you know, at the bottom and at the top, of course, you know, this banister is made of stainless steel. But there are rings of brass at intervals. And then at the end, there's like a hump and then a brass drop like this. And this brass drop is like this. There is a split in the middle. And she looked at that and she said, oh, Zulfikar. I was really amazed that an American woman, though Islamic art was her, but she thought that that banister, the way it drops with this double point, is a symbol of Zulfikar. And she may be right, because Zulfikar is well known as having a double blade. But you know, we Ismailis always have our explanation, that this double blade actually stands for knowledge and action, ilm and amal. So it's a sword of iron, but look at its symbolic meaning is to do with knowledge, ilm, and action, deed. Because these are the two fundamentals of our faith. Knowledge without action is not very good. Neither is action without knowledge. There should be a balance between these two things. Okay, very good. So now we shall go on to the fourth part, for which I asked Rosmin to circulate the 40 poems from the Diwan of Sayyidina Nasir Khisra by Awani and Peter Wilson. And I think you will, have you all had a chance to read it? I hope so. Because it's a beautiful poem, I don't know about the translation. I think the translation can be better, and inshallah will be. But it's an amazing poem in the sense that it describes the beginning of the spiritual journey of Hakim Pir Nasir-e Kisra. And this is all about the ayat which begins the part 4 of our dua, which is the Surah 48, ayat number 10. Yes? Ya inna allatheena yubayyi'unaka yubayyi'unaka innama yubayyi'unallaha yadullahi fawqa aydihim. Verily those who give bayya yubayyi'unaka yubayyi'unallah. Verily those who give you bayya, the oath of allegiance to you, O Prophet, they give it to Allah Himself. Yadullahi fawqa aydihim. The hand of God is upon their hands. Amazing words. And these are the words that Hakim Pir Nasir-e Kisra, a very, very high civil servant in Khorasan, you know, a man who confesses that he was, you know, into worldly things like wine and women. But when he read those words, he thought to himself, where is this hand of God today? If the Holy Prophet Muhammad was that hand in his time, then where is that hand today? So this one ayat is what set him off on a journey from being a Sunni to becoming an Ismaili and not remaining an ordinary Ismaili. His spiritual progress was really fast, and he became a peer or a hujjah, the hujjah of Khorasan. This was the title that the Fatimid Imam Maulana Mustan Sir Billah gave him, and then told him to go back to Khorasan and to start the Ismaili da'wah there. And I hope that you all know, sitting here in London, that today the largest Ismaili group in the world is in Badakhshan, what we call Greater Badakhshan. That is Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Eastern Iran, Chitral, Hunza, and Western China. These Ismailis are in numbers many, many more than the rest of the Ismailis. And this is why one day Maulana Hazim Imam was asked a certain question. And Maulana Hazim Imam replied to the leaders. And two of those leaders I can mention are Wazir Shafiq Sachedina and Dr. Amir Ghulam Hussain. They were the two leaders to whom Maulana Hazim Imam said, do not forget that we have two big traditions in the Ismaili Tariqa today. The tradition of Pir Sadruddin and the tradition of Pir Nasir-e Kisra. And what I want you to understand is that this is the ayat we started this whole history. 48:10. And if you have read the poem, then, you know, let me just, let's go through the poem, because I think there are certain things there which may need a little bit of explanation for some of you. He says, from every school I search, school meaning a school of jurisprudence, right? He was a Sunni. So in Sunni Islam, they have four main schools of jurisprudence or fiqh. And they are called the Shafi, the Maliki, the Hanafi, and the Hanbali. He doesn't mention the Hanbali here. He says that when he read this ayat, he searched. He went to everybody. He sought a sign of guidance of the chosen one of God, Mustafa. Mustafa means chosen. The Almighty, the guide. And each one pointed me a different way. This one said go here, this one said go there. One to China, one to Africa. When I asked for a reason, for corroboration from the Quran, they recoiled in helplessness like blind men, like deaf men. So, you know, he had a very sharp intellect. And so when he asked these questions, in certain tariqas of Islam, they don't allow questions. You cannot ask questions. You have to just take things blindly. But he wasn't happy with that. Then one day, I read in the book, the Quran, the verse of the oath, in which God proclaims his hand is above all hands. And I reflected, pondered on that group who swore the allegiance beneath the tree. Now, I don't know how much Islamic history you know, but this reference to the tree, yeah? This reference to the tree is not in Surah 48:10, but it is in Surah 48:18. So 8 verses further down. So if you want to look at that now, all of you in your Quran, okay? You found it, everybody? So those who haven't got the Quran in front of them, I shall read it out. So same Surah 48, the ayat is number 18. Allah was well pleased with the believers when they swore allegiance unto you beneath the tree. And he knew what was in their hearts. And he sent down peace of reassurance on them and had rewarded them with a near victory. See? So there are 2 ayats in this surah, and you know that the name of this surah is Fath, and Fath means victory. So there is a very important story behind these 2 ayats. And the story is, if any of you have access to a big Quran like this, this is a Shia translation, and he has many, many notes in which you can learn the history of your faith. And the very first verse, there is a whole, you know how many pages it is? 1, 2, 3, 3, 4, 5 pages of explanation. But I'm going to summarize that for you, right? So a big Quran with notes, like Yusuf Ali has one, and Mir Ahmed Ali is one that I know, has many notes, footnotes. Then you can learn about the history by following the footnotes. So the story, the history behind this is that in the 6th year after emigrating from Mecca, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, with a group of something like 1,400 or 1,500 followers, he went to Mecca. He wanted to go to Mecca to perform the Hajj. So they set out, and they reached Mecca outskirts, and they camped where there were some trees. And when the enemies in Mecca, who had been defeated again and again by the Prophet, they saw this big group, 1,500 people, of course they were very cautious. But the 1,500 had nothing warlike about them. They had no implements of weapons of war. They had their personal swords, but the swords were all in their sheaths. So they were not what you call bellicose, warlike. But the Meccans were frightened, so they were watching them, spying on them. Anyway, the Prophet asked first Umar to go and have a conciliation with them and tell them that we are here to do the Hajj. But Umar, he cried off this duty. He said, no, Rasulullah, I can't do that. So then the Holy Prophet asked Usman, and he went with about a 40-50 group of people to Mecca to talk to the enemies. What the enemies did is they just imprisoned them, okay? Imprisoned them. They didn't listen to them or anything. And in the meanwhile, the Prophet is waiting for these guys to come back. And they were not coming back. So then The Prophet, according to the command of Allah, he takes what is known as Baiya, right? Under this tree in the camp. So all of them, 14 or 1500 of them, they all place their hand in front of the Prophet, and the Prophet put his hand over the hands. Now, there is a difference here, everybody. The way we do dua karawi, we do like a handshake, straight. In the northern area of Pakistan, for you know, Hunza Chitra, for which I have some experience, people don't do baya like that. They don't do dua karawi like that. You go in front of the mukhi and kamaria, and you hold your hand for them, and the mukhi or kamaria put their hand on top of your hand. Not a straight handshake style. One on top of the other. That's what happened in this history of the baya under the tree. And this baya has a very important name. It's called the Bayatul Rizwan. The baya which gave God great pleasure. And while I am talking about bayat, again, you see, our Jamaat gets confused between the word bayat and bayt, B-A-Y-T, which means house, Ahlul Bayt. And I have heard in Jamaat, you know, people pronounce Ahlul Bayt as Ahlul Bayt. You know, it's not correct. Please distinguish these two words. Bayt, B-A-Y-T or B-A-I-T, is house. And Bayat with an I in it, B-A-I-Y-A-T, is to give allegiance. Yeah. So what did the Prophet do? He said, whatever happens now from these Makkan people, you all will do as I tell you. That you all take the oath, the covenant to follow me. Because, you know, they were not certain what was going to happen. Okay? But alhamdulillah, what happened is that the Makkans did send Usman and them back, and they themselves came, their representative came, and they had a conciliation. And history tells you that the Prophet gave in quite a lot. Look at this. He gave in to their demands. For instance, when they started writing the treaty of conciliation, Maulana Ali was writing it. So he started with, in the name of, or by the name of God, the Rahman, the Rahim. So this representative of the Quraysh of Makkah, he said, I don't know this God who is merciful and Rahman. Take that up. So Maulana Ali was reluctant, but the Prophet told him, do it. See, that was one thing he gave into. Then the Maulana Ali had written Muhammad Rasulullah, Muhammad the Prophet of God. So the guy said, no, who is this Muhammad the Prophet of Allah? We don't know him. So the Prophet told Hazrat Ali, and Hazrat Ali refused. Hazrat Ali said, no, I can't take that out. So Prophet himself checked out Rasulullah, and he put Muhammad, son of Abdullah. See, I mean, look at the Prophet or the Imam's way of doing things. And anybody who has doubts in their minds will think, oh my God, you know, he's giving in. But by giving in, what happened? People became relaxed, comfortable. In the treaty, they signed both sides that for 10 years they would not lift arms against each other. There would be peace. And in those 10 years, more of the enemies became Muslims because they agreed that, you know, they would not oppress people and they would not force them to remain idol worshippers, etc., etc. So that's why this chapter is called victory. But, you know, in ordinary terms, you might think, oh no, this was not much of a victory. Yeah, but actually, it was a victory in a very subtle sense. because from that time onwards there was peace in the peninsula of Arabia, and people could become what they wanted to become without fear from the side of the enemies, okay? So this tree and these people that are mentioned in this poem, like Jafar, Miqdad, Salman, Abu Dha, these were the close companions of the Prophet, right? And so Nasir Kisra is asking, you know, how is it now with that tree and with that hand? He's saying, where has that tree gone? Where has that hand gone? Where shall I see that hand, that group, that oath? He asked, but he was rebuffed. He was told, we don't know. They are no more. So I was told, the tree, the hand are gone. The assembly dispersed. The hand concealed and buried in secrecy. Those men were the companions, favored by that allegiance and chosen to be with the Prophet in paradise. That's the answer he got. Only those people will be in paradise with the Prophet. Now, there's no tree, no hand, no group. Finished. The whole thing is over. Now see what Nasir comes back. He says, but I said to myself, in the book, it is clear that Ahmad is the messenger of good news. He's a Bashir and the warner and luminous as light. If you want to mark here, this is Surah 33, Ayat 45 and 46. Yes, 45 and 46, in which the Quran says that the Prophet is a witness, a bringer of good tidings, a warner and a summoner unto Allah by his permission, as a lamp that gives light. These two ayahs are very, very beautiful about the Holy Prophet. The Holy Prophet is described as a lamp that gives light. So all of those are here. Good news, Bashir, warner, Nazir, and luminous as light, Siraj and Munira. This is Surah 33, Ayat 44 and 45. Right? Did I say 44 and 45? Or is it 45 and 6? 45 and 6, sorry. Yeah? And then he quotes another ayat. You see, the number is not there. If the unbelievers wish to blow it out, God would light it again in spite of them. So there are two ayats here. Surah 9, 32. Nobody can blow out the light of Allah. And Surah 61, ayat number 8. So there's a reference to two ayats. You see now, you can see that Nasir Kisra had a very good knowledge of the Quran, right? And then he asks, how is it today that no one is left of that community? Surely the word of the universal judge, God, cannot be false. Whose hand should we grasp? Where should we take an oath that even we, men of latter times, might enjoy the justice of heaven? Why should it be our fault not to be born in the time of the Prophet? Why should we be deprived of the Prophet, afflicted and distressed? Look at his question. So he's asking very intellectual questions. He said, what guna have I done? What sin have I committed that I am born, 400 years later? Why is there nobody in my time? And then he goes on and says that, you know, after that he got up and he set out on his way. He gave up his job. He sold everything to finance his journey, and with possibly a mule or a horse or something. And they say that he had a Hindu servant. He set out on this 7-year journey. And this is his, there is a Safarnama, a travelogue, that was the first book of Nasir to be translated into English, right, and other languages as well. So his Safarnama, in that he writes what his experiences on the journey were. And first he went to Makkah, but he didn't find what he wanted there. He carried on east, Because in the vision or the dream that he had seen, this wise person had just pointed towards the west, right? So he carried on westwards. And when he arrived in Cairo, and that is really amazing. That's the last paragraph of the poem which I have sent you. Then one day I reached those city gates. This is Cairo, where angels are servants, where planets and stars are slaves, a garden of roses and pines girded round with walls of emerald and jasper trees, set in a desert of gold embroidered silk, its spring sweet as honey, the river of paradise. So it's very beautiful, right? You have to really read it yourself. And he's looking at Cairo not with a physical eye. He's looking at Cairo spiritually. Angels are servants there. You know, its springs are like honey water, like the rivers of paradise. He's talking about his smiley kalimat that he received from Sayyidina al-Mu'ayyad Fiddin Shirazi, the Bab of the Imam of the time. And you know how Sayyidina answered every question that he had with two proofs, one from the macrocosm and one from the microcosm, right? Two proofs for every argument. And Pinasikishvara was completely and utterly converted to the Ismaili Tariqa. Amazing, amazing. I think perhaps if you read this poem now again, you will find a lot more in it, right? Since I've given you a few pointers, yeah? And it's a lovely poem. It's a poem that all English-speaking Ismaili should now enjoy, okay? But I want to discuss a few more important things in this ayat, yeah? That this hand of God, you see? The hand of God is upon their hands. But in history, that hand was the hand of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Yeah? And this is another difficulty of the Holy Quran. That in the Holy Quran, there are many such anthropomorphic ayats about God. So God has a hand. God has eyes. God has a shin. God has a face. He has a side, janb. He has a tongue, lisanullah. Ainullah, all these, right? So, you know, what happened? And it's a, we will discuss this again when we come to Qul Huwallahu Ahad. Because the Quran also has verses which say nobody's like him. He's unique, he's one. So, how do you reconcile this, what we call the bipolar language of the Holy Quran? Two extremely opposite ways of describing things. So the Ismaili interpretation has always been that where the anthropomorphic physical attributes of God, such as hand, face, etc., are mentioned, they mean the vicegerent, the Khalifa of God on earth, the Prophet or the Imam. And where it is Qul Huwallahu Ahad, that's a mention like Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard. It is a mention of the universality of that light, the oneness of light. We'll discuss this more when we come to part 6, okay? For the moment, I want you to understand this is a very important ayat because of this word hand. Yadullahi fawqaidihim. So if the Prophet's hand is not over you, if the Imam's hand is not over you, then you do not have Allah's hand over you. And that's what Pinasikishvara realized. And this is again another way of saying that the Imam is the wasila, tawassalu indal masai. He's a wasila, he's an in-between us and divinity. And therefore he has both aspects. He has humanity as well as divinity. And we go on that the ayah then says, فمن نكس فإنما ينكس على نفسه ومن أوفى بما عاهد عليه الله فسيؤتيه أجرا عظيما. Whoever breaks his baya, what happens? He does so to his own soul's loss. If we break our baya, i.e. if we do nafarmani, what will happen? Is the Imam going to suffer? Is God going to suffer? No. We will be the losers. We will be the ones who will be what is called kasara, in loss. Our souls will be damaged. Our souls will regress, go down, go back. But whoever fulfills his covenant, fulfills his promise, his allegiance, he will soon grant him ajran azima, immense reward. Immense reward. So that's a very, very necessary understanding to have in the Jama'at. You know, because we are very selective about our farman bardari. We, you know, accept the farmans which are good for us. And if they are a little bit hard or rigorous, we tend to sideline them. But we need to understand this bit here, that baya is a allegiance, a bond, which is two-sided. Two-sided. And that's why the word baya in Arabic has this meaning, buy and sell, both opposites. Like the word mawla, master and slave. This word baya means to buy and sell. Now, the minute you say that, what does baya mean? Baya means we, the murids, the followers, the Ismailis, the spiritual children of the Imam of the time, we sell our soul to the Imam. And the Imam is buying our soul from us. Right? And I'm sure that saying it like this, many of you are shocked. Why are we shocked about buying and selling? Because we all have this false notion that in religion everything should be free. It's not the case. You know, religion is like society, human society. Religion is like that. You know, we should understand religion from human society. And I'm going to give you now some Quranic verses which are going to help you to understand this point. So we'll go to Surah 9 and look at Ayat 111. Found it, everybody? This is Surah 9. This is the same surah in which the one ayat about blowing out of the light of Allah is. But Allah is not going to allow anybody to blow his light out. In the same surah, there's another ayat which is also very key, and that is the ayat number 103, which you can look at in your own time. But I want you to now concentrate on 111. No. Allah has bought from the believers their lives and their wealth, because the garden will be theirs. Garden, paradise, Jannah. They fight in the way of Allah, and so they slay and are slain. They are martyred, and they kill others in the way of Allah, exactly as it happened in the Prophet's time. And those are the two first sentences which are the most important. The important point, إِنَّ لَحَشْتَرَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَنْفُسَهُمْ وَأَمْوَالَهُمْ. Right. God buys from the mu'mins their souls, their lives, and their wealth. So if you don't sacrifice in this world, you can't expect paradise in the next world, in other words. And you know, many, many, many people have very wrong ideas about religion. Yeah? Mm-hmm. That, mind you, I'm not talking about every Ismaili. I'm talking about some people who have this idea. They think that, oh, you know, you should not have any fees, any zakat, the song, nothing in religion. You should all be free, free, free. It's not like that. It's not like that at all, according to the Holy Quran. And this 103, which I've just also asked you to have a look at yourselves, you'll see there, when the translation is take alms, this is a wrong translation. The word is sadaqa. Sadaqa is the synonym of zakat, the son. God is ordering, commanding the prophet, take sadaqa from their wealth. Why? So that you may purify them and make them grow. Baraka, growth. And pray for them, you see? It's very clear. Even in that ayat, nothing is free. You know, religion also has challenges and trials and tests. That there has to be monetary sacrifice. You know, our Ginan said that. What is that kali about whatever vastu pyari arpan kije shana naam par, right? I remember snippets from the holy Ginans, but I never remember the heading of the Gina. But I know there is this kali from one Ginan that whatever precious things you have, present it to your Lord. Rosina is here today. Maybe she can, during the question and answer, she can give us that dinar.
It's Dura Deshati Yashida, I think.
Huh?
It's Dura Deshati Ayovanjaro.
Dura Deshati Ayovanjaro. Yes, it could be that, right. Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Anis. All right, so now we've looked at the most important points in this ayat, but now I want us to look at the preamble of the constitution. Preamble of the constitution is very important, right? And this is paragraph D. And I want you to really understand these words. Many people have read this. You know, one thing which we are falling into the trap of is that we think we know English. And therefore, we read things once, thinking we will understand them. But I'm afraid Maulana Hazrat Imam's farmans, anything to do with Imamat, it doesn't require one reading. It requires much more than one reading only. And now I'm going to go through paragraph D. You'll see what I mean. The authority of the Imam in the Ismaili Tariqa is testified by Bayya, by the murid to the imam, which is the act of acceptance by the murid of the permanent spiritual bond between the imam and the murid. The permanent spiritual bond between the imam and the murid. When I discuss this with some of my students in other groups, they just gloss over the word permanent. What does the word permanent mean to you? Is something permanent if it only lasts in the physical world? Or is something permanent when it bridges, arches over both worlds? Life hereafter as well as life here. You know, the word permanent is a very strong word in English. It's like saying eternal. So it is not only a permanent, but now look at the word bond. We thought about that, bond. It's really interesting that the English word bond is very close to the word banda. Because the word banda in Farsi comes from to tie together. So baya is a spiritual, permanent, spiritual bond. And these are really mind-blowing words, you know. I think we could really spend a lot more time thinking about these words, and I'm sure they will give us a lot of confidence about who we are and where we are going and what will be our end. you know, many people are worried about, you know, what will happen when they pass away. The relatives are worried about, you know, if so-and-so passes away, what will be, you know, how are they, what are they, where are they? We have enough farmans from Maulana Sultan Hoxha and Hazar Imam about the status of Rouhanis, because they all had done bayah. They had enacted a permanent spiritual bond between themselves and the Imam. And then this definition continues. This allegiance, right? So you see the word allegiance comes in. This allegiance unites all Ismaili Muslims worldwide in their loyalty, devotion, and obedience to the Imam. And then beautifully finishes with, within the Islamic concept of universal brotherhood. So we are definitely part of humanity. We are definitely part of the Muslim Ummah. But within that, we belong to this special permanent spiritual bond with the Imam. We are the spiritual children of the Imam. You know, have you ever thought about the visits to Tajikistan and Syria? You know, when the Imam addressed the Jamaat, and there were many others who were there as well. How did he start? My beloved spiritual children and my brothers and sisters in Islam and other faiths. That's how he started those farmans. He distinguished us from others. And when he finished, he said, you know, I give my best blessings for this, this, and this to my spiritual children, and I pray for this, this, and this for you. You know, we don't reflect on these things, right? It is a very, very special, very, very spiritual, and a permanent bond. Now, when I read this, immediately to my mind comes that Dinan. And only last night I looked up the meaning. This one is Satguru Arya. Satguru Arya. And it says, Wari Wari Hiralyani Gant. Keto Tute Panare Chute Nahi. You cannot undo it. Wari Wari Hiralyani Gant. Hir means silk. And this is all about the love. So, you know, you tie up this knot after knot after knot in silk. And maybe it will break under certain circumstances, but it will never unravel. It will never undo itself. You know, even Dinas have such beautiful things, right? And I found that really, you know, that's the bond we have with the Imam of the time, yeah? So, you know, I think it's already a few minutes past 1 o'clock. I don't think I can finish the end of the part, though it's not that it doesn't require too much explanation. The dua, what is it? Lahumma firli, lahumma gafirlana, zunubana. وَرْزُقْنَا وَرْحَمْنَا بِحَقِّ رُسُلِكَ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ وَأَئِمَّتِكَ الْمُتَّهَرِينَ. The pronunciation is very difficult here, very difficult here. So let me just do that. You know that Allahumma means, oh our Lord. Maghfir. If it was Allahumma and then Aghfir, you pronounce it separately, but you have to elide, you have to run those into each other, so it becomes Allahumma Aghfir Lana. So forgive us our sins. Warzukna Warhamna. Warzukna comes from rizq, sustenance. Again, what sustenance? Are we only talking about physical sustenance? Well, God gives that physical sustenance to the snakes and the toads and the frogs as well. We are here talking about spiritual and intellectual sustenance. And we are asking for mercy. And how are we doing this? through, be hacking through, through the Vusholikai. Now, this word is very difficult. It took me years to correct it, because Vusul, R-U-S-U-L, Vusul is the plural of Rasul. So when you pronounce Rasul, it's longer than its plural. This is another characteristic of the Arabic language. You know, if you say the word Kitab, the long R, but when you make it into a plural, it becomes Kutub, short. So this everybody finds very, very, they say Rusulikal, right? It's not, it's absolutely Rusulikal. Rusulikal, Mukarrabin, closest, A'immatikal. A'immatikal, Mutahharin, and the pure Imams. And through our Lord and Imam, Shakarim al-Husayni, Allahumma laka, sujudi wa ta'ati. That's not very difficult to understand, and I didn't want to spend too much time on it. But the history, the background to this ayat, what influence and impact it had on dynastic Israel, and that is the history of the Badakhshan Jamaat, and the preamble of the constitution was very important, and very important to understand the concept of sacrifice, material sacrifice, time sacrifice, sacrifice of knowledge, you know, because without sacrifice, where is the reward? How would God decide how to reward you? He has to reward you on, you know, how much you do. Okay, so I will stop there. We have finished fourth part, and next week we'll go on to the fifth part.